A new universal religion has been created through this phony pandemic, plague, phony health crisis. And what we can definitely say is that the normie participates and accepts it. In fact, relishes in it. In fact, welcomes it, chooses it voluntarily of their own volition. The normie needs this new religion and worships the fake pandemic, worships this new paradigm, this new false reality. We can say, obviously, that the fake pandemic, the fake reality exists only on television. It's presented on television, but it becomes reality in the mind of the normie. The normie needs to have this, and in control of the normie is not the normie themselves, but as we have discussed, and as you shouldn't already know, that in control of the normie is the Jew. You're in a false reality that the Jew has created through mass media, through all the institutions, through all the governments, through all the politicians, through all the teachers, through all the religious figures. Yes, your priest, your minister, all the way up to the Pope. Because all of them, all of the so-called leaders of every institution, every segment of life, they all work for the Jew.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false.
I take the fact that he develops weapons of mass destruction very seriously. I call upon all nations to do everything they can to stop these terrorist killers. Thank you. Now watch this drive.
What did Iraq have to do with what?
The attack on the World Trade Center.
Nothing.
My great uncle, who was a very young man serving in World War II, he was part of the 89th Infantry Division, the first Americans to reach a concentration camp.
Our fellow Americans,
right now the COVID-19 vaccines are available to millions of Americans.
And soon, they will be available to everyone.
The science is clear. These vaccines will protect you and those you love from this dangerous and deadly disease.
They could save your life.
So we urge you to get vaccinated when it's available to you.
That's the first step to ending the pandemic and moving our country forward. It's up to you.
Be 6.5 billion people are idol worshippers that, according to the Torah, do not have the right to live.
But there is such a concept in Jewish laws that any population, and under very, very specific circumstances, according to various rabbinic opinions, it would be seemingly permissible to kill children.
Fix it? I'm only 10. I can't even do anything in this war. I just want to be a doctor or anything to help my people, but I can't. I'm just a kid. I don't even know what to do. I get scared, but not really that much. I do anything for my people, but I don't know what to do. I'm just 10. That's what did that kill them. It's not fair. It's not fair. Our house get us terrified because we don't know when we will die, when we will survive, when we will do anything. I can't believe the war. The occupiers are literally killing kids and parents are crying. Mothers can't believe their kids are dying. Kids in this house, they were, she was in her parents' house. There was a 5-year-old kid, a 5-month-old kid, with his dad living inside their still house. I think the mother actually took the 5-month-old kid. When they went there, an explosion just went right to them. Went right to them. The mother and the 4 kids died, and the 5-month-old still is still alive. It was a miracle for the 5-month-old being alive, and also the father was not there, so he still also is alive. See, they're just kids. Why wouldn't you just send a missile to them and kill them? It's not fair.
that there's a mitzvah and a command to wipe out from among all the descendants of Esav, descendants of Amalek, male and female, young and old. And that is why Amalek is so terrible, and it has to be totally uprooted. Therefore, God tells us we should erase their memory, and we should eradicate them from the face of the earth. Who is Amalek? Amalek comes from Esav. Esav was a brother to Jacob.
Esav, who in modern day terms is really basically, certainly one of them is America. Esav became Edom, which is a nation. Edom became Rome. Instead of it being Rome, it became Christianity. Christianity, of course, ultimately became Western civilization. So Esav today is really Western civilization.
But the new Rome, the United States, but the new Rome.
Esav is Europe, the United States.
The throne of God is incomplete until we destroy Amalek.
Any nation that has that religion can be considered Esav.
The audacity, the chutzpah to destroy Amalek and to cut off the offsprings of the nation of Amalek.
I have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you the Prime Minister of Israel, His Excellency Benjamin Netanyahu.
I want to thank you, Democrats and Republicans, for your common support for Israel, year after year, decade after decade. No matter on which side of the aisle you sit, you stand with Israel. And I will always be grateful to President Obama for that support. This Capitol Dome helped build our Iron Dome. My country, Israel, the one and only Jewish state. If Iran wants to be treated like a normal country, let it act like a normal country. I know that America stands with Israel. I know that you stand with Israel. God bless the United States of America.
America is a golden calf, and we will suck it dry. Chop it up and sell it off piece by piece until there is nothing left but the world's biggest welfare state that we will create and control. This is what we do to countries that we hate. We destroy them very slowly. Benjamin Netanyahu, Jerusalem, 1990.
Tyler?
Who's Tyler?
Seth, it's Saturday. Tyler's my Shabbos goy.
Wow. It's beautiful. Can we have Tyler preheat the oven before he leaves?
Already done.
Wow. That's some goy.
And I'll tell you something else. I was in Israel right before the pandemic, and as I was walking down the street, when people knew I was American, they would say to me, make sure you keep Trump. And one more quick story, and then I got some more questions for you, is the yarmulkes on your head. They're selling Trump ones everywhere in Israel before the election.
That's right.
I got some. I got a few in my house. And I actually said to one of the vendors, I said, excuse me, this was just as a joke. I said, do you guys sell the Biden ones also? And they just laughed. They just laughed, and they thought it was hysterical because they said, no, we don't want that guy in office. Mr. President. No.
Well, you know, the biggest change I've seen in Congress is Israel literally owned Congress. You understand that 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And it was so powerful. It was so powerful. And today it's almost the opposite. You have between AOC and Omar and these people that hate Israel. They hate it with a passion. They're controlling Congress, and Israel is not a force in Congress anymore. It's just amazing. I've never seen such a change. And we're not talking about over a very long period of time. But I think you know exactly what I'm saying. They had such power. Israel had such power, and rightfully, over Congress. And now it doesn't. It's incredible, actually.
It's an honor to be here with the first Jewish president of the United States.
When I was a young senator, I say, if I were a Jew, I'd be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist.
You know what? If I could make an arrangement where I had a stand-in, a front man or front woman, and they had an earpiece in, and I was just in my basement in my sweats looking through the stuff, and then I could sort of deliver the lines, but somebody else was doing all the talking and ceremony.
Many of us are frustrated with the nearly 80 million Americans who are still not vaccinated, even though the vaccine is safe, effective, and free. We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us.
In the global fight against COVID-19, the Jewish people, who make up a tiny percentage of the world's population, have had an outsized impact in the difficult battle to protect lives as scientists. Chief medical officers and top healthcare officials. Yet the contributions of one extraordinary person tower above the rest. That extraordinary person is Pfizer Chairman and CEO, Dr. Albert Bourla. Dr. Bourla led his team to deliver a COVID-19 vaccine in record time, while taking a risk by declining U.S. federal funding to avoid government bureaucracy and expedite vaccine production. A child of Holocaust survivors from a Greek Jewish community destroyed by the Nazis, he's proud of his Jewish heritage, is active in Holocaust remembrance and education, and a strong supporter of Israel, which was the first country outside the U.S. to receive the Pfizer vaccine and the antiviral pill. The pandemic is certainly not over, but the world is infinitely better off with Dr. Bourla helping lead the charge to save lives, with more than 2.5 billion Pfizer vaccine doses already distributed. Because of Dr. Bourla's extraordinary contribution to humanity as the world battles the worst health crisis in 100 years, Dr. Albert Bourla has been selected as the recipient of the 2022 Genesis Prize, the Jewish Nobel Prize. Thank you, and congratulations, Dr. Bourla.
I'm honored to stand here today with dedicated colleagues from within the Department of Justice as well as beyond it to announce a historic settlement with Pfizer Incorporated, a pharmaceutical manufacturer, and its subsidiary Pharmacia and Upjohn Company, arising out of civil and criminal allegations relating to Pfizer's allegedly illegal promotion of various drugs, most notably Bextra. In a combination civil and criminal settlement, Pfizer has agreed to pay $2.3 billion, the largest healthcare fraud settlement in the history of the Department of Justice. Within that $2.3 billion is a criminal fine of $1.195 billion, which makes it the largest criminal fine in history. When a drug is marketed or promoted for non-authorized, so-called off-label uses, any use not approved by the FDA, as was the case here, public health may be at risk, and there's a real danger for patients that the medical providers who prescribed the medicine or the device aren't provided with, don't have full information about the drug's risks and benefits.
The Office of the Inspector General in this department, and Dan Levinson is here on the stage with me this morning, spent 4 years in the conduct of this investigation. They didn't just implicate Pfizer. They actually identified and charged the senior managers who were responsible for the fraud.
Major drug companies have been caught red-handed marketing drugs for unapproved uses. Now, even after pledging not to do it and paying millions of dollars in fines, guess what? They're at it again. Let's go now to Monica Bertrand for all the details. Monica?
It's Carl. It seems that way. The practice of marketing drugs for uses other than what's on the label has been going on for years, and it's a huge moneymaker for drug companies. Pfizer has paid some of the largest fines in the industry after promising to stop marketing drugs for off-label uses in 2004. Just 2 months ago, its Pharmacy and Upjohn unit agreed to plead guilty to promoting a drug approved only for the relief of arthritis and menstrual discomfort, now for treating all kinds of acute pain. Now, for this, Pfizer has to pay the largest criminal fine in U.S. history, $1.19 billion. So why do drug companies continue the practice? Well, in short, as we mentioned, off-label sales are a huge moneymaker. According to a study by Stanford University, about 15% of all drug sales in the U.S. are for unapproved uses. Estimates show doctors write more than 10 million of these types of prescriptions each year. Dr. Sidney Wolfe, director of health research at Public Citizen and editor of WorstPills.org, says it's a serious problem, but he's not sure it will really stop.
It is dangerous, maybe not in every instance, but I would say in the majority of instances, people have been injured or killed as a result of illegal off-label promotion. Unfortunately, the companies are making so much money off of the illegal promotion that when they pay only a fraction of what they made in these penalties, they just keep doing it.
And despite promises to stop the practice, Pfizer, Eli Lilly, Bristol Myers Squibb, and four other drug companies have paid a total of $7 billion in fines and penalties since May of 2004 for, again, marketing those medicines to doctors for unapproved uses. Scarlett?
And Monica, $7 billion is not insignificant. Aren't these big pharma companies concerned about all these fines adding up?
Not at all, but take a look at the stats, Scarlett. Pfizer has paid a total of $2.75 billion in off-label penalties since 2004. It works out to a little more than just 1% of the company's revenues of $245 billion from 2004 to 2008. And Eli Lilly, they already had a criminal conviction for misbranding a drug when it broke the law again, promoting its schizophrenia drug Zyprexa for off-label uses starting in 1999. The medication provided Lilly with $36 billion in revenue from 2000 to 2008. That's more than 25 times as much as the total penalty. So you can do the math. Now, you can call it a legal fig leaf if you'd like. Essentially, companies skirt the problem because there are no real reprisals, I should say, other than paying the fine. A parent company can continue to participate in, say, government programs even after its subsidiary has pleaded guilty to marketing drugs off-label. Scarlett, back
to
you.
So no real disincentive here for the companies to stop doing this.
And they're making a lot of money, you can see, compared to the revenues they take in for the drug.
One of the whistleblowers, John Kopchinski, a former Pfizer sales rep and Gulf War vet, said in a statement, "In the Army, I was expected to protect people at all costs. At Pfizer, I was expected to increase treatments at all costs, even when sales meant endangering lives." In 2010, two virologists filed a federal lawsuit against their former employer, Merck Pharma, alleging the vaccine maker lied about the effectiveness of the mumps portion of its MMR2 vaccine. Merck hired Jewish Dr. Stanley Plotkin to testify on their behalf. He was a shoo-in to win the case. However, the astute prosecuting attorney exposed him for the vile sociopath that he actually is. The following is a portion of the January 11, 2018 legal deposition of acclaimed Jewish vaccinologist Dr. Stanley Plotkin, who is widely considered the godfather of modern vaccine programs.
Have you ever used the mentally handicapped to study an experimental vaccine?
What I'm saying is I don't recall specifically having done that, but that in the 1960s it was not unusual to do that, and I wouldn't deny that I may have done so.
There's an article entitled "Attenuation of RA273 Rubella Virus in WI38 Human Diploid Cells." Are you familiar with that article?
Yes.
In that article, one of the things it says, 13 seronegative, mentally retarded children were given RA273 vaccine.
Okay, well, then that's what I did.
Okay. Have you ever expressed that it's better to perform experiments on those less likely to be able to contribute to society, such as children with handicap, than with children without or adults without handicaps?
I don't remember specifically, but it's possible.
Do you remember ever writing to the editor of Ethics on Human Experimentation?
I don't remember specifically, but I may well have.
Okay. I'm going to hand you with some markers, Exhibit 43. Do you recognize this letter you wrote to the editor?
Yes.
Okay. Did you write this letter?
Yes.
Okay. This is one of the things you wrote. The question is whether we are to have experiments performed on fully functioning adults and on children who are potentially contributors to society, or to perform initial studies in children and adults who are human in form but not in social potential.
Yes.
Have you ever used babies of mothers in prison to study an experimental vaccine?
Yes.
Have you ever used individuals under colonial rule to study an experimental vaccine?
Yes.
Okay. Did you do so in the Belgian Congo?
Yes.
Did that experiment involve almost 1 million people?
Well, all right, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you ever visit what was the Belgian Congo and Urundi?
Yes.
How many times?
Once.
Jewish professor Sir John Bell is president of the Academy of Medical Sciences and Regius Professor of Medicine at Oxford University. He is a member of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation Scientific Advisory Committee.
I'm hopeful we're going to start to get a readout early in the autumn as to whether this thing works or not. A lot of this depends on the intensity of infection. So in order to get a readout, you have to have a certain number of incident cases in the control vaccine population, of incident cases in the control vaccine population, of incident cases in the control vaccine population. And of course, anything that happens...
Professor John Bell.
mRNA vaccines create spike proteins in the body. These proteins require a pathway to the ACE2 receptors that most of us have in order to generate the so-called antibody. Spike proteins are now shown to cause blood clots, myocarditis, pericarditis, sudden death, and a whole host of autoimmune diseases. A new Japanese study regarding upregulation of spike proteins and who specifically is most and least at risk of developing blood clots and other side effects.
I'm just going to tell you the facts. If you look at that paper, the people that have the most upregulation of the ACE2 pathway, because some of this is kind of surprising, are white Caucasians from Europe, and it's about 56% upregulated in those people, as well as in non-African blacks, 56% upregulation of the ACE2 pathway. Then it drops down to 39% in African blacks, and then it drops way down to 10% upregulation in Asians, and then it drops down to zero. And the zero upregulation are two groups, the Amish and the Ashkenazi Jews, and the Ashkenazi Jews, and the Ashkenazi Jews. Huh. There it is. I mean, I'm throwing that out. You can just, that's the fact.
I think the opposite is true. They were looking at the science, misinterpreting it, and then drawing conclusions that meant, oh, we should put masks on all of our children. Well, countries like Sweden didn't put the children in masks at all. The children didn't get sick and die, neither did the teachers. And yet the conclusions we drew from the CDC, I think, were incorrect and have led to a great deal of setbacks for our children. But you're right. The biggest error they made was not acknowledging that once you've had COVID, you have immunity and that it's protective. By not acknowledging that, they've been pushing 4 or 5 boosters. They've been saying that 2-year-old children need to have boosters. There's no truth to that. There is no evidence. I asked Dr. Fauci this in committee. There's no evidence that a booster for a child protects transmission, hospitalization, or death. The only thing a booster does is it your child will make antibodies to a booster, but there's no evidence that it's of any benefit to your child to get a booster. We've known since the beginning of time. Look, if you ask Dr. Fauci, there's a clip of him from 2006 where a mother says, my son has had the flu. Does he need to take a flu vaccine? And Dr. Fauci correctly responds, no, if you've had the virus, that's the best inoculation ever. It's better than a vaccine. That's what he said in 2006. That's still true. We don't want to get COVID, but if you've already had COVID, you have been inoculated. It has a great deal of protective effect. It's more than twice the protective effect of a vaccine, and all of the studies show that it's long-lasting. But because they don't acknowledge this and they don't study this, they keep going blindly on to more and more vaccines. You've got to have foreign vaccines. What I want to know is, if you've had it, what is your risk? It turns out your risk of going to the hospital is 57 times less than somebody who hasn't had it. It's very protective, but until they acknowledge that, as long as they ignore that science, they're not being honest with the American public, and no amount of overall the CDC will work if they're not honest about the scientific data. It's the same guy. It's the same guy who also was complicit with these doctors who wrote to Lancet, the journal, and said, oh, it's a conspiracy theory to say that this came from the lab. I think this is the biggest cover-up in modern medicine. And when we get to the bottom of it, when we take over the Senate, we take over the House, we will investigate the origins of this because it's serious. There are labs around the world doing experiments on viruses that have 50% mortality, trying to make them more transmissible, to trying to make them aerosolized, trying to make them more infectious. This is a death wish for humanity, and we must do something about it. And Dr. Fauci's at the very origins of this because he funded the research and then he denied it was gain of function. But I had a panel of three prominent scientists come to Congress about 3 weeks ago, and they acknowledged that this was gain of function, and it hasn't been honest, that Dr. Fauci has not been honest with the American people.
The Jew introduces a challenging false paradigm, as they have with this corony baloney scamdemic convid hoax. They have really activated mental illness within the population of the world, of the entire world. And they keep this false reality going. The politicians keep it going. The administration, the institutions of every type keep it going and going. And the media, of course, keep it going and going constantly, incessantly, without stopping.
Just recently, you and your wife got your shot, your first shot, on her birthday of all days. Did you feel a sense of relief and joy?
Getting that shot really was an amazing feeling. It hits you.
Did you cry?
I cry at movies. I didn't cry at the shot, but you know, it was a moment where you realize, okay, this is it. And it wasn't so much because I felt that I'm at high risk, because we're being careful and I'm healthy and I'm young and all that, but at the same time, it's knowing that each of us doing our part is getting through this, because we don't get through this unless the vast majority of the population gets that first shot and then a few months later gets that second shot.
So it's a very uncomfortable and confusing, disorienting, a bit frightening experience. I also want to deal with the concept of evil, and evil can be easily thrown around, but I think it's too facile of a word, of a term to use to describe what we're seeing, because I always thought that evil was nothing more than mental illness. It's actually, in my findings, one and the same with mental illness. The only thing that varies is the quality and the quantity of this mental illness, how it manifests itself in terms of quality and quantity, which results in the severity and the egregiousness of the mental illness, of the behavior which we call evil.
You got a chicken brain, all right? You got a chicken brain. Smile. Say hello to your sister.
That bird like garbage.
I woke you up. It's not your place. Go away.
You're going to kill someone else to atone for your own sins? Yeah. You're going to accrue more sins?
It's not a sin. It's brought in the Bible. They were created to be slaughtered. That's their main purpose in this world.
I know that each time you hold a chicken by its wings, it's very calm.
The law. It's really painful for them. When you slit their throat, they don't feel pain?
What? The way they do it, the knife is so sharp.
How do you not see that?
Hey, you should drop that with them.
What logic makes you seriously think that you are passing your sins on to another living being?
Have you any idea the cruelty you're inflicting upon these animals?
Fuck off.
Those chicks in those crates want their mothers in the same way we did when we were born. They're just a different species.
You laugh, but that's how ugly you are inside.
So you have a right to protest here?
You think you own the sidewalk?
Shame! Shame! Shame on you! Shame! Shame! Shame!
It's a shame!
Shame! Shame!
Sticking up for animals.
It's crazy. It's crazy. How you make videos? Come on.
You think they're hungry in those crates?
I fed them.
No need to work yourself up. It's all good.
You don't stop me from chickens.
Back up.
Do me a favor.
Say hello.
I want the world to see what sick shit is going on the public streets of Brooklyn illegally.
Yeah. You're an asshole, buddy. Get away from me.
You touched the foot.
What's so funny? Why can't you just use money? No one gets hurt.
Pay me and I will not do that.
You have the power to put a stop to this, ma'am. Imagine their suffering in those crates.
Testing in front of a slaughterhouse.
Why don't you go to Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Have you ever stepped on an insect?
Go to McDonald's.
Go to McDonald's.
Go protest outside an abortion clinic.
What about abortion?
Fight against abortion.
Do you stand outside abortion clinics? Yes or no?
Donald Trump.
Chickens are going to people who need it.
Why you need to kill a chicken when you could be using money instead for the same exact practice.
If there's a better way, it makes sense to choose the better way.
In their 6 weeks of life, the chickens are treated with deprivation, neglect, and cruelty. Elected officials turn a blind eye to the 15 laws that are broken because ultra-Orthodox Jewish communities vote in blocks. The Jews have a disproportionate number of mental defectives, idiots, and imbeciles. It is well known that a large percentage of neurasthenics and neurotics are Jews. In Europe, blindness, deafmutism, idiocy, and insanity are up to 5 times as frequent among Jews as among Gentiles. Dr. Maurice Fishberg, Eugenic Factors in Jewish Life, 1917.
Mental illness cannot be modified. It cannot be cured, so to speak. It can be controlled. A lot of people are controlling it only through pharmaceuticals, and there's many reasons for that. The main reason is that it's very lucrative. But controlling something is not the same as modifying it or curing the situation. When we examine the Jew, I think, again, it's too superficial and too cursory to call the Jew evil. Mainly because what we consider as evil is considered by the Jew as normal functioning for the Jew. Actually virtuous for the Jew. What is it that we see as evil? What we are actually seeing is, as I discovered early on, decades ago, that what we are actually witnessing and experiencing and maybe tormented by is mental illness. And I've always believed that the Jew is mentally ill through genetics, possibly inbreeding, most likely. And also, it's a congenital situation when it comes to the Jew. Maybe all Jews, or maybe most Jews, are born mentally ill. Now, that doesn't mean that they cannot function in other areas, and they cannot function even at a high level, obviously. But their whole perspective is skewed because of this mental illness, and this mental illness manifests itself through paranoia, well, basically psychosis, where they lose connection, either completely or partially, with reality.
חבילה של פסועה, של פסולת שיוצאת מהקיבה של בני אדם וחתולים וכלבים וערלות ונמרים רותחת מבעבה שם שמים אותו, שם הוא נענש כרגוע רגע ורגע זה חכה, את זה לא הבאתם, אה? כל הכנסיות, כל הצלבים שלהם הצלב הגדול הזה על הארו בברזיל מתפוצץ לבסיסים לכל העולם, לכולם יראו את זה.
Vous allez le payer très cher, les Européens. Mais à un point, vous n'avez même pas notion de quoi on parle. Et vous n'aurez pas où fuir. Quand l'Italie disparaîtra, quand Edom, c'est pour ça que le QG de la chrétienté qui vient de Essav se trouve là-bas, quand cet endroit-là disparaîtra, et c'est ce que veut faire l'islam, il s'occupe. L'islam, c'est le balai d'Israël, sachez-le. C'est-à-dire que je trouve, au lieu qu'on fasse tout le travail, et on voit Ishmael pour régler le problème. Quand il va débarrasser tout ça, et que le va revenir chez nous, alors c'est Melech HaMashiach.
Cette guerre-là, dans le monde dans lequel on vit, elle est nécessaire. Et pourquoi est-ce qu'elle est nécessaire? Parce que l'un va utiliser l'autre. Pour ne pas qu'Israël rentre en guerre, Akadosh Baruch Hu, Shtabar Shemola, dit le Chafetz Chaim, va provoquer que Ishmael se lève contre Esav. Donc ce que vous êtes en train de subir en France, en Europe, qui fait tellement peur, ça devrait être pour nous la plus belle nouvelle de notre histoire juive. Enfin, on commence à s'y approcher. Enfin, on commence à réaliser ce que les sages nous avaient prescrit avant. Ce que je vous ai dit tout à l'heure, c'est marqué dans Sanhédrin. Le Mashiach reviendra que quand Edom, l'Europe, la chrétienté sera totalement tombée. Donc je vous pose la question, c'est une bonne nouvelle que l'islam envahisse l'Europe? C'est une excellente nouvelle, ça annonce l'avenue de Mashiach.
De grandes hécatombes se prépareront dans le pays d'Édom, Rome. C'est un jour de vengeance pour l'Éternel, une année de représailles pour la cause de Tzion. Tout ça, c'est marqué dans le prophète Ishaïa.
Et ce sera le monde juif qui va grandir et grandir, et que ce sera la nation qui elle va gérer le monde. La terre d'Israël, à Kadosh Baruch Hu, il va l'attirer, le monde entier, ce sera Israël. Et Israël, ça sera Yerushalayim. Et la seule personne qui va dominer dans le monde, ça sera Be'ezrat Hashem, avec le Mashiach, cette pierre qui elle va grandir, ça sera le peuple d'Israël.
The most respected newspaper in Israel is the Jerusalem Post. The headline reads, Yosef, Gentiles exist only to serve Jews. Rabbi Yosef is the former Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, and the foremost rabbinical authority in Israel. Quote, the sole purpose of non-Jews is to serve Jews. Goyim were born only to serve us. They have no place in the world, only to serve the people of Israel. Abraham Kook, the religious mentor of the entire settler movement, said, quote, the difference between a Jewish soul and souls of non-Jews is greater and deeper than the difference between a human soul and the souls of cattle. The Talmud, chief books of Jewish law, say clearly in a number of places that Gentiles are not even human beings, and it goes much further. I quote, the best of Gentiles should be killed. Talmud sages explain this commandment by saying, quote, the best of Gentiles should be killed just as the best of snakes should have their heads crushed. Nice.
Workers electrically prod terrified cows into a squeeze box where they chain them by two legs. The bottom then drops open, causing the cows to plunge to the kill floor. Workers then hoist the struggling cows by their chained legs and swing them into place. To wrestle the cows' heads into position, workers grab them by the nose with a metal hook and pin their heads to the floor with a sharp pronged tool called a devil's fork. Using the devil's fork, they wrench the cows' heads back, exposing their throats for the ritual slaughter cut. Teams of kosher slaughterers are sent from Israel to South America. Up to 80% of the kosher meat exported to Israel comes from slaughterhouses that use shackle and hoist methods. Even after the cow's throat is cut, the worst is still to come. Hung upside down, many cows are fully conscious while bleeding out, some for over 2 minutes. But workers start cutting into them, despite the fact that they can still feel pain. This cow remained alive and conscious for several minutes during the process.
One worker plunges a spike called a puntilla into the back of the head to sever the spine. But this just paralyzes them and doesn't kill them or render them unconscious. After previous PETA investigations, the chief rabbi of Israel promised to phase out shackle and hoist slaughter and declare the meat to be non-kosher. But as this new investigation has exposed, these promises have not been kept. Why continue to kill animals in such a primitive and cruel way? The answer may surprise you. It's not for religious reasons. Shackle and hoist slaughter persists because it's faster and cheaper. This calculated cruelty allows slaughterhouses to kill more than 90 cows per hour. Shackle and hoist slaughter is almost twice as fast as less agonizing methods. This is the hidden cost of cheap kosher meat. The cows are paying the price. Shockingly, representatives of the chief rabbi's office previously defended the kosher status of shackle and hoist beef, declaring that gratuitous cruelty does not disqualify the meat as kosher. It's in the Jewish interest, it's in humanity's interest that whites experience a genocide. Until white children are burned alive, white women raped, mutilated, murdered, and all white men who have not been slaughtered watch powerlessly as their people are terrorized. Only then will mankind be on a more equal footing, ready to discuss white privilege and the apparent chip on the shoulder that minorities have. Rabbi Ishmael Levitz.
Donc pour ce faire, il faut tout simplement supprimer les frontières, détruire les nations, détruire les races, détruire les religions. Autrefois, au XIXe siècle, ce projet était incarné par le projet communiste. On sait que Karl Marx, qui était à l'initiative de ce grand projet communiste, était lui-même d'une famille juive. Aujourd'hui, on nous parle de l'homme enceint, on nous parle du transgenre, on nous dit que l'identité sexuelle n'est pas innée, mais elle s'acquiert. Donc ce n'est pas du tout le fruit du hasard, on retrouve toujours cette obsession égalitariste, ce fanatisme égalitaire qui entend anéantir, détruire toute différence, araser toute spécificité, tout particularisme, toute tradition chez les êtres humains. Mais quand tout sera détruit, qu'est-ce qu'il restera? Eh bien, il restera les Juifs, qui eux auront conservé leur spécificité, leur culture, leur tradition, et qui seront, paraît-il à ce moment-là, selon eux, reconnus par tout le monde comme le peuple élu de Dieu. Voilà leur projet.
So there's a second thing in that black box. An unrelenting stream of immigration. Non-stop. Folks like me who were Caucasian of European descent, for the first time in 2017, will be in an absolute minority in the United States of America. Absolute minority. Fewer than 50% of the people in America, from then and on, will be white European stock. That's not a bad thing.
It's very clear that the Jews want to exterminate the European race. Richard Coudenhove Kalergi, who is the father of the European Union and who was funded by the Jewish bankers Rothschild and Warburg. Now, this man wrote a book called Praktischer Idealismus in 1925, in which he stated that the Jews are a master race, and that the Jews can only assume the throne of rule over the world by weakening the European race, and that the means to weakening the European race would be to dissolve all the European nations, destroy all their cultural heritage and their national traditions, and replace that with the European Union, and then to invite in Africans, Middle Easterners, and Asians to dilute the blood of Europeans through miscegenation to the point where they became a degenerate mixed race. And then at that point, these people would no longer have any sense of nationhood, and the ancient Jewish messianic prophecies of world rule out of Jerusalem, with Jews maintaining their nationhood and their national status, it would fulfill the Jewish messianic prophecies that the Jews could then rule the world. And this was completely in line with what Nicolai had written in 1917 and has manifested itself recently with the invasion of immigrants from Africa, from the Middle East, and from Asia into Europe, America, and Australia. And they are deliberately setting about to genocide the white race and destroy all sense of nationhood and of national heritage and national culture in each of our nations.
I speak of the death of the white race, the complete removal of all means of reproduction of the so-called Aryan race. Men, we now control the destiny of this race. It is now time to make sure the white race becomes extinct through miscegenation and having a virtually zero birth rate. We have all enjoyed the vision repeated all over this world every day of the last white children playing with little dark children and knowing that they are being set up for their eventual destruction. We can ruin the ancient pure bloodline of an Aryan child by convincing him or her of the altruism of begetting interracial children. We must expose the race mixing of the urban centers to the suburbs and rural areas of this country. Abe Foxman, ADL President, August 25, 1998, New York. The goal of abolishing the white race is, on its face, so desirable that some may find it hard to believe that it could incur any opposition other than from committed white supremacists. Make no mistake about it, we intend to keep bashing the white dead males and the live ones and the females too, until the social construct known as the white race is destroyed. Noel Ignatieff, Harvard Professor, 2002. Forbid the whites to mate with whites. The white woman must cohabit with members of the dark races, the white men with black women. Thus the white race will disappear. Our race will rule undisputed over the world. Our superior intelligence will easily enable us to retain mastery over a world of dark peoples. Rabbi Emanuel Rabinovich, Council of European Rabbis, Budapest, 1952.
It is true, unfortunately, and I think this needs to be frankly admitted by Jews all over the world, that there are, without doubt, Jews involved in those movements and those organizations, very often NGOs, etc., who promote this phenomenon of third world immigration into the Western countries.
One of them is Barbara Spector, a former American who made Aliyah and then, 10 years ago, with the help of the government of Sweden, set up a non-denominational institute of Jewish learning with the Greek name of Paideia, here in Stockholm. She believes the current wave of anti-Semitism in Sweden will pass and that Jews have an important role to play in a country undergoing profound change.
I think there's a resurgence of anti-Semitism because at this point in time, Europe has not yet learned how to be multicultural. And I think we're going to be part of the throes of that transformation, which must take place. Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies that they once were in the last century. Jews are going to be at the center of that. It's a huge transformation for Europe to make. They are now going into a multicultural mode, and Jews will be resented because of our leading role. But without that leading role and without that transformation, Europe will not survive.
Barbara Spector and husband Rabbi Philip Spector moved to Sweden in 1999. She established the Paideia Institute in 2001 using taxpayer funds. She admitted her goal isn't to help migrants and refugees acclimate, adjust, and assimilate to Swedish culture. Her mission is to ensure an established Talmudic Jewish supremacy, which is the clergy plan. Make no mistake, her goal is to destroy Sweden, Europe, and Christian nations by weakening the bloodline of white Europeans. Remember, Ishmael is the broom for Israel. Refugees don't occur by happenstance. There would have to be a crisis, a natural or manufactured event to displace millions. People en masse don't abandon their families, community, country, and culture for no reason. For that to happen, it takes. War.
In the Zohar HaKadosh, you will find there an extraordinary information. There will be two big buildings in the land of Edom, which today we relate the word Edom to America. And those are the biggest, the tallest buildings in the world. And they will be brought down completely. And that will be the sign of the beginning of tremendous wars that will end only in the coming of the Mashiach. 1 week before, one of the great rabbis in Israel, Chassidish Rabbi, he came with some people, some of his disciples in the car, and they were coming towards the evening. He didn't want to lose the time of Mincha, you know, the prayer of the afternoon. So he said, please, can you stop right here? I want to daven, I want to pray Mincha here. They prayed Mincha with Minyan in front of everybody passing in Manhattan. Where? Right there, near the World Center. After he finished the davening, the prayer, he said, say bye-bye to those buildings because you are not going to see them no more. Say bye-bye to those buildings because you are not going to see them no more.
It's common knowledge Israeli Mossad and the CIA are behind the 9/11 terror attacks. Francesco Cossiga, president of Italy.
I would argue that if you really want to know what's happening with Middle Eastern policy, then you must read Oded Yanan's A Strategy for Israel in the 1980s. Now, in that document, which is pretty much being played out to a T right now and has been for many years, there were serious objectives for Israel. And Israel's main objectives were to expand and grow in line with the Greater Israel Project. And in order for it to do that, there would need to be an excuse to justify the expansion of Israel. And in order to do that, we would have to sow the seeds of sectarian hatred and violence in the region. The number one target of this plan was Iraq. We've achieved that. That's not a failure. That's actually a success. Iraq is a failed state, largely. It is an absolute basket case. Sectarian hatred is absolutely insane. We see the beheadings and all of this madness, and we think it's a disaster. No, it's not at all. In fact, it's all part of the plan to break up Iraq into three different states. When we look at Syria, we also find that the goal is once again the same thing: sow the seeds of sectarian hatred and basically turn that nation into a basket case. This is happening according to plan as well. Now, ISIS, funny enough, could stand for the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service. Many people are seeing the very, very big benefits to the State of Israel, the so-called Jewish State of Israel, by the breakup and the balkanization of the surrounding states. So actually, if you believe what's being told to you, and I just don't know why anyone would believe anything that comes out of the mouth of virtually any Western leader, whether it be Obama or Bush or any of the rest of them, all of these people are nothing but patent liars, and everything they say is pretty much the opposite of the truth.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, No. He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq. Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
Hillary Clinton, unaware the camera was still rolling, laughs at the brutal assassination of Libyan President Muammar Gaddafi, October 11th, 2011.
"We came we saw, he died.
Did it have anything to do with your visit?
No, I'm sure it did.
The wealthy Jews rule the world. The fate of the governments lies in their hands. They start wars between countries, and when they wish, the governments make peace. When the wealthy Jews sing, the nations and their leaders dance along, and meanwhile, the Jews get richer. Theodor Herzl, the father of Jewish Zionism.
Since the spring of 2014, an estimated 3.6 million African and Middle Eastern migrants, 90% of which were younger men under the age of 35, illegally entered the continent of Europe by myriad land and sea routes. This unprecedented event, precipitated and managed by the hostile liberal elite, then required continuous mainstream propaganda and NGO support for the native European population to willingly accept its continued demographic demise. The details have been researched so abundantly that there is no need to discuss them further. However, what has never been explored to any significant degree is how this costly billion-dollar international scheme was paid for, and how the poorest people on earth were somehow able to walk right into the nations of Europe, which often required cold hard cash and in sums they simply couldn't afford. Firstly, how does a 20-year-old youth from the Democratic Republic of Congo, where the average yearly wage is about $400, come up with some 2,000 bucks or more to pay for the long trek across the African continent into Libya, then onto a makeshift boat that could ferry him to a European port of call? Well, in short, someone gave it to him. The sum of $2,000 to a young African in any of the sub-Saharan regions is the equivalent of about $100,000 for a similarly aged, unmarried young person living in America. Young people from these areas simply do not have that sort of cash. There have been numerous reports of NGO trucks and black unmarked vehicles operating in the vicinities of well-known pickup points along the early stages of these migration routes. And although these culprits, handlers, and exchangers of currency have been difficult to source, there is no question that large quantities of money are being funneled in somehow. The total operational transport cost to all migrants who illegally entered Europe over the past 5 years is estimated to be about $8 billion. This was paid mostly in cash. Such an alarming total exceeds even the GDPs of some of these countries put together, and there is absolutely no way that all of this money came from third world pockets. So, where did it come from? About a year ago, the infamous globalist hegemon, George Soros, admitted to divesting some $18 billion of net worth into a number of his NGO platforms, and in particular, the Open Society Foundation, which is the umbrella entity or Politburo that operates hundreds of globalizing progressive organizations that now encircle the planet. This had been done over the previous 2-year period. The money essentially disappeared for all intents and purposes, as no one cared to audit the so-called charity, and it had become so vast that no one would have even known where to begin. This largesse would have no doubt been enough to cover monies owed at the ground level for the operational costs of the migrant flooding of Europe, although the NGOs supporting this already had the existing financial flexibility to aid in the day-to-day movement of migrants, including the use of modern transport vessels sailing in the Mediterranean, many of which, interestingly, owning Israeli shipping registrations.
When we're talking about offshore money, when we're talking about political subversion, when we're talking about collusion, I wonder whether we're looking in the wrong place. And I say that because George Soros recently gave Open Society, his organization, which of course campaigns for free movement of peoples and supports supranational structures like the European Union, he recently gave it $18 billion. And his influence here and in Brussels is truly extraordinary. Open Society boast that they had 42 meetings last year with the European Commission. They've even published a book of reliable friends in the European Parliament. And there are 226 names on that list, including yours, sir. I thought you'd find this interesting. We even had last week Mr. Verhofstadt lobbying on behalf of Mr. Soros at the Conference of Presidents in a battle that is going on with Viktor Orban, the Prime Minister of Hungary. If we're going to have a debate, and we're going to talk about full political and financial transparency, well, let's do it. So I should be writing today to all 226 of you, asking some pretty fair questions. Have you ever received funds, directly or indirectly, from Open Society? How many of their events have you attended? Could you please give us a list of the meetings of all the representatives, including George Soros yourself? And I think this Parliament should now set up a special committee to look into all of this. And I say that because I fear we could be looking at the biggest level of international political collusion in history.